Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Homebase Business 101. My name is Isaiah. I have the pleasure of introducing the host. You know him. He's everybody's hero, my best friend. Will you please join me welcome my granddaddy, Baba Jahi.
All right, right. Good evening, and welcome to another edition of Blog Talk Radio, Homebase Business 101 show, where we do the National Black Unity News show on Monday nights. We have several other shows that we do throughout the course of the week on the same format and same channel. And we're excited and we're happy and thankful to be able to do the National Black Unity News show. And we have with me today in our studio audience Mr. Ralph Johnson and also Mr. David Murphy. And what we're going to do is, as we do every time we come on these airways, we have a reading that we do from Daily Motivations for African American Success by Dennis Kimbrough. And today's reading goes like this. August 5th, Roots. Quote, if we would just support each other, that's 90% of the problem, unquote. Edward Gardner, founder of Salt Sheen Products. Upon a recent trip to San Francisco, I learned a valuable lesson about mutual support from California's majestic redwood trees. Redwood trees are inclusive trees as they grow. They incorporate into their basic structure objects around them, including rocks and other plants. Although redwoods have shallow roots, they are noted for their strength and longevity because they share their roots with others. Each individual tree is invited into the whole, and it turns helps support the entire group. This adaptation appears to have worked for redwoods among the oldest living species of vegetation on Earth. Black America, African Americans can learn a valuable lesson about surviving and thriving from the redwoods. We must continue to share our roots and heritage with each other, to ask for encouragement and support when we need it, and to stand ready to give the same to those who come to us. Pearl Washington, who was Chicago's first African-American mayor, remarked rather proudly, quote, sure, I'm pro-black. If I don't support and give to our own, who else will do it? We must use whatever power or position that we have to ensure that no one is left out, unquote. By sharing our roots of support, resources, and compassion, we uplift the race and ensure that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Today, I will support my own, including people, businesses, and ideas. And that's our thought for today about being inclusive and making sure that we share our roots and include other people in what we're doing so that, you know, the sum is greater than the parts. Is greater than the parts, and that's why we're doing. That's why we do this show, National Black Unity News Show, in which we bring different people on here that are making news that is newsworthy. And today we have such a gentleman, Mr. Ralph Johnson, who spent 18 years as a correction officer in Baltimore City Correction Center. And while there, you know, he ended up authoring a book called CO, which is a documentary kind of story about the correction facility and the different things that he experienced and the trials and tribulations that he went through along that journey. And he's also currently running for mayor of Baltimore City. And he's one of those kind of off-the-grid kind of candidates that's running. And he know he has what he calls a very simple solution to crime. Take care of people's needs. If people's needs are met, they don't have time to concentrate on crime. So we'll let him be able to elaborate a little bit more about that, especially since he comes out of a position where he was around criminals every day as part of his job description and things that he had to do in that facility. So we're thankful to have him on the airwaves with us tonight. And always, we also have Mr. David Murphy, publisher of the National Black Unity News, here on the airwaves with us tonight. So let's get this kicked off. Mr. Johnson, you there?
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about the book you wrote and the things that you experienced at the Baltimore City Correction Facility.
First of all, I'd like to thank God Almighty for allowing me the opportunity to be here today. I'd like to thank the National Black Unity News. And just like to let the audience know a little bit about myself. I am a Baltimorean through and through, born and raised in Baltimore. I served my nation, my country, in the United States Army for 8 years. I am a retired correctional officer. Shout out to BCDC, Baltimore City Jail. I've been a critical analyst at City Hall for the last 8 years. I'm a critical mason, and I receive no money from status quo entities because I have to have the freedom to be able to serve all the citizens of Baltimore with equity. I served actually 18 years, 4 months at the Baltimore City Jail. Those 4 months mean a life because going out the door, it was a life and death situation. And for so many years, working in that type of environment, it's a very humbling experience because you see so many lives just devastated. But the one thing that I noticed, that it was a lot of intelligent young men and women that came through there with a lot to offer society. And because of their socioeconomic conditions that was laid down before them, a lot of them weren't given a chance to pretty much compete with individuals from society, the local government and private industry invested in their community. So working down City Hall or observing in City Hall, I've noticed that Baltimore is saturated with inequity. It's a socioeconomic blueprint that invests in certain communities and neglect other communities. And that does not give everybody else a good advantage in life. So if we give everybody an equal opportunity for upward mobility and a great quality of life, I think it would produce progressive behavior. And it's the best crime plan in the world, equity.
Okay. Could you share with us a little bit more about some of your experiences of working at the jail and what that was like?
Working at the Baltimore City Jail is a very volatile environment, extremely dangerous environment because of the level of frustration and desperation and hopelessness. A lot of people pretty much have forfeited their opportunity to freedom because of the crimes that they have committed. And when you're in that environment, closed-in environment of frustration, it's real dangerous. You have 120 individuals to a tier. When they come out of those tiers, the least thing as far as bumping into somebody or taking too long on the phone and things of that nature could cause a death. We had a... Now, I've written a book, The Indictments, about the Tavon White impregnating the four correctional officers, and I've written about the pervasive corruption that's in corrections that allow certain things to go on, but I would be remiss, and I really would be remiss if I did not tell your audience how courageous and brave correctional officers are. And most of them are legitimate. Most of them are hardworking. Most of them are true to the blue. And many of them have saved my lives. And they are a vital asset to public safety because they live among Baltimore's worst offenders. and they put their lives on the line every day. It's an honorable profession. And one of the reasons that I wrote the book, CEO, The True Story of the Baltimore City Jail, is because in real time, I wanted to let people experience the anxiety and the fear and the bravery that we go through walking those tiers. And the people that you all see on TV who have done horrific things, we're there with them. We're the ones that are telling them that they have to go into the cell. And when they do not want to go in the cell and they pull out a shank, we don't have a gun, but we don't have clubs. We just have us in our brain, in our heart, in our faith. And we have to put those individuals in those cells, and we have to stop two individuals from stabbing each other to death, or we have to stop an inmate from attacking an officer. And it is a frustrating environment. When I first got there, I wasn't all the way together because I was accused, falsely accused, of a major kingpin charge, actually, where someone had left drugs in my vehicle. And people talk about the Baltimore Police Department. Now, this is a twofold thing because it was one police officer that lied and almost cost me 23 years in prison, but it was another police officer, his supervisor, that went to court and testified or communicated with Judge Brown, saying that I wasn't the one that they were looking for and that his officer falsified the statement. So where you have bad police officers, I can honestly say it was a police officer that put my life in jeopardy, and it was a police officer that saved me. So that being said, you have to deal with people according to their merit and not based on historical references or stereotypes, because there are a lot of good officers out there, and I can attest to that.
Well, let me say this. Let me jump in here, Brother Satavi. This is David Murphy, publisher of the National Black Unity News. And first of all, I want to thank my brother, Ralph Johnson, for being on the airways with us this evening. And as always, Brother Satavi, I appreciate you, sir, for the works that you're doing, that you've done, and you continue to do. But I'm real happy, and I'm very pleased to have my brother, Ralph Johnson, on there, because I know this brother from many years ago, just like I've known you, Satavi, for many years. Me and Ralph go back in the trenches together. And we didn't talk about this. I know we're going to talk about it in a few. But Ralph is an author. He had wrote several books way before he wrote the books about the jail, you know. And I know him personally. I taught people, you know, most people that know me on these airways, you know, I had this thing, you know, we call them gifts and talents. Some people look at spiritual gifts, and it's a thing called discernment. And when I first met Ralph, right off the bat, I felt this brother, man, I felt his sincerity. You know, I mean, it was so sincere, man. I mean, even partnered up way back in the day with the Informer newspaper. And that,
yes,
you know,
sir.
And I don't do that, and I didn't do that lightly, because, you know, I don't let anybody into my inner circle like that. But, you know, because the sincere of this brother. And even till this day, you know, me and Ralph have, you know, lost track of one another over the years, you know, some back in the day. But when we resurfaced again, you know, we do this thing called Black Men Unifying Black Men. He started attending these events. And I say this, I just want the listening audience to know, you know, and I don't say this about many people, but this is one sincere brother whose heart is in the right place. And I know he's running for mayor of Baltimore City. And I know that, you know, he's putting in, I see him out there, you know, I'm constantly on social media because that's part of my business. And this brother out there, he's actually putting in the work. Now, see, Ralph is a true soldier. And I don't say that about everybody, because I know, you know, like I said, a lot of people can claim to be this and claim to be that. But, you know, I know, you know, firsthand knowledge, because I'm a soldier, you know, and all sharp as on, as they say. And
yes,
and I know, and this brother's constantly putting in work. He don't have to do this. He don't have to. I mean, he's doing this because he loves his people. He loves his city. And he sees the degradation that's taking place in our community. See, we all in this thing together. What's happening to a few of us is happening to all of us. You know, and I don't endorse people, you know, because I'm in the, I run a national media outlet. And so I leave that kind of thing open. But I can say this about this brother. I know he's sincere, and I know that he really wants to help people. And I know he's like my namesake. He's a David fighting a Goliath. And but nevertheless, he's standing there. He's fighting every damn day. Excuse my expression. He's out there fighting every day. Every day. And I bear witness to that. And so y'all need to take a real good look at this brother. You know, I mean, a real good look at it. He's sincere. He's straightforward. He don't pull back no punches. And he's just straightforward about things, you know. And but the things he talk about and the places he visits and the people that he's talking to, he told me that he was running for office. You know, I know he was serious about it. But when I start saying, and you know, people can talk all they want to, but when you start putting in the work, that's a different story. See, the Bible says faith without works is dead. This brother is walking the walk and talking the talk at the same time. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to interject that to you because that's why I say I am extremely pleased to have this brother on the airwaves. And I want you to know this, you know, like I say, we're all humans, ain't nobody perfect. But I'll tell you this, this brother is one sincere brother, and I believe if he was elected, if he is elected, he's going to put it in order. He's going to change things because he knows firsthand. See, he's from the old saying, from the guttermost to the uttermost. He knows how to deal with them from one end of the extreme to the top echelon, you know, and he deals with all of them. But, you know, I tell you one thing, though, you know, our community is in crisis. And so, Brother
yes.
Ralph, I just want to ask you a few questions, man. And
yes,
people need to know this. Why in the world are you running for mayor of Baltimore City?
Well, the main reason that I'm running for mayor, as you know, Brother Murphy, Baltimore is a tale of two cities. Our local government and private industry do not equally invest in all of Baltimore. You have the press areas in Baltimore that have not seen an investment dollar since the 1960s. And when you neglect areas, it breeds frustration and desperation and hopelessness, and all of that culminates into the crime and murder that you see today. So being a product of public housing and being on the wrong side of disparity, with all of my experience, and just being down City Hall and seeing the inequity where all the citizens of Baltimore aren't developed, all the being invested in, all the communities aren't being developed, and people are just simply reacting to the situations that they're being placed in. And my mantra is, if you treat Mount Street like you treat Mount Washington, you'll reduce crime overnight. And this is not a conspiracy theory. Our city is deplorable. We don't have progressive businesses. We live in a city of 300 neighborhoods with only 300 recreation centers. The power centers are closed. We have no supermarkets in these areas. The capital improvement is bad. We have dilapidated housing that needs to come down. So when you do not have a socioeconomic landscape to produce progressive behavior, this is what you're going to have: 300 homicides a year. We've reached, I think yesterday, 200, and you just had a gentleman that was killed a couple of hours ago. So this is why I'm running, so that all Baltimoreans can have a great quality of life, not just downtown, but across town as well.
All right. And guess what? I'm going to ask you something else. See, now I know, like I said, what I do, well, you know, I ain't going to talk too much about me, but I do know this. You know, recently, our state's attorney ran for office, and I know you was very active in her campaign. And so you came from out of the penal institution, and you know these brothers, like I said, all the brothers that were there wasn't guilty of everything, but you know these brothers, man, some you had to deal with the murderers, the innocent, the lockdowns, you know, all kinds of people, drug addicts, everything you had to deal with. So you had to, I can understand you had to deal with these type of people. So I know you know how to deal with people, but at the same time, like I say, you know, I'm in media. Let's just have this open conversation. We're gonna get deep and down tonight. And
yes, sir.
I'm in the media. And see, you know, people don't understand propaganda is such a powerful tool. The media is a powerful tool. And before the show went on air, I asked my brother, I said, I know some of the candidates. We even had one or two of them come to the Black Men Unified Black Men Breakfast.
Right.
And I want you to come there, Ralph. I want you to come there and state your case as well. So you got an open invitation from me. But at the same time, I see these brothers in the media. I see this Indian guy. I see these other people, you know, say they want to run for office and all this kind of stuff. But Ralph is out there every day. Every day. I don't see my brother in the media. Can you explain why is that so?
Well, because of my message, Equally Investing in Baltimore, and I'm actually seeking to demolish the socioeconomic blueprint of systemic segregation and economic inequity that does not give all Baltimoreans a fair chance, and I'm not in the pockets of status quo, and I'm not taking any status quo entities' money. A lot of the media invests in the business community, the greater Baltimore community, the Chamber of Commerce. So Baltimore is a plutocracy. A plutocracy is when the wealthy and the business community pretty much controls the government. So I'm talking about personally annihilating that as mayor, and I'll be able to because the mayor controls the budget, the floor of development, and all the financial spending boards. And with that type of power, I'm challenging their power. So they're making a conscious effort not to expose me or give me any credibility because my rise means their fall.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I hit it on the head when I say you are David against a Goliath, huh?
Hey, but Dave, you know what? It's understandable. This situation been like this. The tale of two cities, the inequity been like this ever since 1910. Baltimore declared the first law of its kind in American history that whites cannot live in black communities and black people cannot live in white communities because our city council at the time did not want black people to benefit from the resources and investments in white communities. And this has been perpetuated up until now. So that's part of our social economic landscape. And in order for all Baltimoreans to have an equal opportunity for upward mobility, that blueprint has to be demolished. And I want to start that process, and as mayor, I'll be able to do that.
Wow. Ralph, let me say this to you, sir. Man. You know, like I said, I want people to know who you are. You know, and on this broadcast, see, we own less than 1% of the media, black media.
Yes.
And see what Ralph just explained to you, because these entities that had this type of power, not only the media, the infrastructure of the city, the money brokers of this city, like I said, he's standing up against them because this thing has been systematically going on for hundreds of years, and it's well entrenched in our community. That's why you see the tales of two cities, what Ralph was talking about. You can go down North Avenue, and I used to go up and down Broadway Street. They were in the same condition one time. Man, look at one place, look at the other place. You know, and so something's wrong with that picture, especially when we live in a city with a predominantly black community, and we get black leadership. So something got to, you know, we can't continue on this kind of track because something's wrong. And now we get national attention. What do you think about that, Rhett, this national attention thing? What's your take on this thing?
Well, actually, and I don't often mention my great friend, but I'll take the time to do it now. Madam State's Attorney Mosby, and this is why I admire her so much, she set the stage. She set the stage of challenging a powerful system. And it just wasn't about the inequity on the judicial side. It was the fact that someone got national exposure for taking up the imbalance, the disparity and inequity of Baltimore City on a social, economic, and judicial level. And they wanted to suppress that, but they weren't able because her message was so strong and her fierceness to fight injustice was just so contagious to everyone else. She became a major threat, and it woke a lot of people up. So she set the stage of us being on a national level in terms of gaining power. It's one thing to protest, it's one thing to march, it's one thing to sing or dance or whatever, but it's another thing to actually have power, because the power, you literally can change the social economic landscape of how things are. So this is what she taught me, and this is what she's teaching grassroots boss Martin, that hey, you don't have to keep bagging these people. All you have to do is take your case to the citizens of Baltimore, get in the seat of power, and then you can literally change things. And that's the path that I am going on.
All right. That's a powerful thing, just to speak truth to power, you know. And I'm glad, you know, I'm glad not only Marilyn Mosby is doing it, you doing it as well. You know, we've been crying out with the National Black Unity News to say that we have power, but we don't use it effectively. Or some of us are so timid that we dare not use it when we're in the position to do so. And Ralph, let me just say something. Let's go a little deeper, man. Let's go back in the day a little bit. I want to talk about, you know, because I want people to know this whole man that we're dealing with. See, sometimes, you know, a lot of people see surface stuff, you know. But you wrote several books back in the day, and I read them books, man. I was so impressed with you, you know, because you got some, you hit on some subject matter that's deep and entrenched in our community. Can you elaborate on some of the books that you wrote back in the day?
Well, most definitely. My first book back in, I believe it was 87, to give you an idea of how passionate I'm about for gaining equality for all Baltimoreans, particularly the 63% African-American population of our great city. My first book was called For the Consciousness of African-Americans, and it was a volume of poetry because I wanted to wake the citizens of Baltimore up in terms of let's stop committing genocide, let's stop being self-destructive, understand that the odds are against us. But the only way out of this is to unite and do progressive things and become progressive-minded. I wrote, my next book was a short part dedicated to the African-Americans. That was also a book of poetry. And then I wanted to get involved with the novel writing because people were urging me. And my first novel actually was at the Baltimore City jail. I was an offset just recently started working there, and that was called The Ghetto Love. And that was very important to me because it explains why black men and black women coexist and why we have established a culture of going against each other instead of uniting. And I know it's a cliche, but it goes all the way back to slavery, and it goes all the way back from when welfare was established in 1934, how certain laws were made where black men couldn't be in a household in order for the woman to get a paycheck. And my thing is, most of us are doing bad in African-American community, and to hold our poverty situation against us to break up the family, I think that was a bad thing. Actually doing is bad for the community. So if we are eligible for assistance, our women are eligible for assistance by virtue of the fact that the man cannot be in a household, so you're structurally disenfranchising a people. So ghetto love stories is basically about that. And you know, in ghetto love stories, it's always been for the tragedy. So then I took it to another level with child support. How child support is basically a business. And whenever you're dealing with business over people, everything is going to be geared towards exploitation. So it benefits the system and the system of child support to break up the household. And don't get me wrong, a lot of in the book of child support, it explains to the black man that you're out of order for leaving your obligations. It's nothing under the sun that's a cause you to not take care of your responsibility. There is no excuse. So it's a lot of different layers that I covered. I covered the racial part, the economic part, the accountability part, and the psychological trauma of the black family. And I covered that in self support. And I've written a few other books, Unintended Targets. And all of my books basically is geared towards the situation that goes on in the African American community. Child support, I want, is a crossover book because, of course, child support could involve anybody. But for the most part, I wanted to send a message to the African American community that at the end of the day, yes, the debt may be stacked against us, but at the end of the day, we still have to be accountable for our actions. We have to rise above our circumstances and be tough and overcome our situation and not prey on each other and trust each other. So most of my books were along their line of accountability in spite of the situation that we are in.
Fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, we're at the top of the hour, and we're going to take a free station break, and we're going to get back to this conversation. But this goes to shit. I just want to share with you because Brother Ralph Johnson, man, like I said, I've read all of those books that he spoke about. I've read them. And the brother is deep. He's sincere. And you know, that what makes me, you know, like I said, I don't speak that much about individuals like this, but this brother is sincere, he's deep, and he really cares. I mean, for him to even write these type of books, man, he had to dig deep, you know, because I'm not the brightest bulb in the pack, but I'm gonna tell you this, I'm not the dullest either. And
right.
But you know, when people speak truth, you know, it's an instinct that we all have within us, you know, that you can feel it, you know, you can tell, you know, you can just, you know, for even somebody to even pen stuff the way this brother penned it, they have to take deep thought, deep concern, and deep love. And so, ladies and gentlemen, here we are at the top of the hour. I'm going to share a little information about the National Black Unity News. The National Black Unity News is a nationwide circulated black publication. And it's by us, and it's for us. And ladies and gentlemen, there's over 200 black newspapers in the entire United States. And the National Black Unity News is totally different from each and every one of them. We are self-supported, self-reliant. Like my brother Ralph here, we don't depend on no outside resources to take care of. We take care of ourselves. We're not kept by anyone. And so when we put information in our publication, as I said before, it's by us and it's for us. And I encourage you to get your subscription today. And I had a great meeting today, and we're coming back out. This is how I started out. We had a directory, a discount directory. We're starting a nationwide discount directory again. We get ready to launch it. And it's going to have a nationwide subscription policy attached to it. So, ladies and gentlemen, get your latest issue of the National Black Unity News at www.thenationalblackunitynews.com, or you can call 443-455-2373. So get your subscription today, and as always, support this broadcast, because this broadcast is designed to support you. Back to you, Brother Satawi.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I want to thank you for that information, David, that you shared, and I'll let you get back to interviewing Brother Ralph here in a minute. This show is brought to you by the Voitex. You might say, what is the Voitex? The Voitex is the online discount travel booking engine that allows you to save money every time you book your travel. We beat Expedia and Price Right. 85 to 90% of the time, our prices are cheaper than theirs. And when you do, whatever you save, that comes back to our organization in the form of a donation. So just like we just recently had a client that went on and they saved $53 on one booking and $48 on another. And that enabled us to have, you know, some ongoing, keep us some ongoing revenue coming in to help us, support us with being able to broadcast this radio show, because it's, you know, it's not, this radio show is not free. And so, you know, we do have to raise money for it, and we have a fundraising program. And that fundraising program, if you want to know more about it, if you go to www.fundingbytravel.com, you can see how you can sign up and get your own Vortex fundraising link for your organization, for your nonprofit, for your faith-based institution. And who knows, hey, you know, you could be on the brink of raising some serious, serious cash. I'm talking about anywhere from $250,000 to $500,000. We have a program that can help you raise those kind of dollars. And basically what we're doing is we're helping people get their market share of what Expedia and Priceline is getting from their supporters. Expedia, $95 billion, you heard me correctly, $95 billion in revenue for 2019 is what they expected to bring in. And Priceline, they expected to bring in close to another $100 billion. So between those two, $195 billion. They have a corner on the market. And you're losing your market share, as we say. Your market share. People are booking travel online. They're booking hotel rooms. They're renting cars. They're going on cruises. They're staying at resorts. And every time one of your supporters or followers does that, and they do that through Expedia or Priceline and not your own personal link that you have, then you're losing money. You could be getting your market share. So, again, we just want to make sure you understand the power of getting your market share out of the travel industry and several other industries. So that's what the Vortex is about, and the money that's raised through Movements Unlimited Vortex helps with paying for this show and also for the other community activities that we do to enable us to keep our 501c3 status and moving forward each and every day. Again, we just want to thank you for tuning in and listening tonight, and turn it back over to David. David, you go ahead and finish interviewing Mr. Ralph.
All right, fantastic. Speaking on that, by the way, I just want to make one more announcement. On on August the 27th, 2019, at 6 p.m., at Nava's Restaurant, the National Black Unity News will be hosting a networking event for all you business owners, potential business owners, people looking for part-time, spare-time, full-time employment. Come on out and visit us at Niles Restaurant. And it starts at 6 p.m. August the 27th at 6 p.m. at Niles Restaurant, 5722 York Road, 21212. And we also are going to be hosting our book fair on October the 12th. And we have information on our website as well as on social media about that as well. But we're going to get back to our guest, Mr. Ralph Johnson, who's running for mayor of Baltimore City. He's an activist. He's an author. He's a concerned citizen of the great Baltimore City. And I do know one thing. You know, I'm running a national campaign, you know, and it's not an easy task, you know. And most people who know me know, I tell you, my steps are ordered. You know, I say the things I do is by divine inspiration, you know. I don't know what makes other people move or what inspired them to do the things that they do. But I do know that we all, God has put all kinds of gifts and talents into each and every one of us. And we nurture those gifts, and our gifts will make a way for us. And I know that we are each other's brother. We are each other's keeper. I am my brother's keeper. And so, Brother Ralph, I know, man, you know, I've been living in this city all my life. You know, and you can attest that I just had a birthday on August the 2nd. I just turned 68 years old. And I'm still kicking. But, you know, I've been there and I've done a lot of things in that lifespan. And I've been down in the trenches. I've been on, you know, I tore things up at one time in my life. And then, at this point of mine, I'm trying to build a legacy. You know, not only right. for myself, but for my children and my children's children. And we all in this thing together. And it's not an easy task when you be given a mission in life. And you seek out that mission, no matter how great or how small it may be. But you have the courage and the wisdom and the knowledge to go forth with it. And I admire you, brother, because you're taking on a task, man, that has the responsibility of a lot of people, a whole city of Baltimore, and that's a major task. And what motivates you, sir? What drives you to do something like this?
What drives me is inequity, concentrated poverty, 300 and something murders that could be prevented if you simply per year since 2015, we've had over 200 murders every single year for the last 21 years, with the exception of 1 year, and that was 197, simply because of inequity. That is what motivates me, because it's something that could be avoided simply by our mayor as executive manager using the authority and power and that's invested in that office to treat all the citizens equally, develop all areas equally to produce a progressive outcome. Now, in the wake of everybody coming up with a crime plan, our president's council, he has a crime plan. Our mayor, he has a crime plan, a 30-page crime plan. Basically, our crime plan should be equitable. Simple as that. You don't need a 30-page crime plan to sell the citizens of Baltimore an illusion. You just have to implement equity and treat everybody with equality, because you can create a million crime plans, but if you do not enhance people's quality of life, if you do not demolish the social economic conditions that produce crime, you're going to have crime and murder into infinity. Now, my thing is, you have to revitalize these depressed areas where you have most of the crime and murder for the last 20, 30, 40 years. They're in the same area. They're not spread out. They're in the same area. What you have to do, you have to improve the socioeconomic conditions. On the social level, you have to improve the education system, more trade schools. You have to put recreation centers, child centers, improve sanitation, playgrounds, community centers, tear down dilapidated buildings that breed rat-infested environments. The houses that should be sold, if you take those houses and you pretty much sell them back to the citizens of Baltimore so that they can stay in Baltimore and revitalize those neighborhoods. This is what the Affordable House Trust Fund was all about. It's a trust fund that was created in City Hall to enable low-income residents to purchase or to salvage their homes. Our mayors give that money to developers who are building this so-called affordable housing that low-income and poverty-stricken people cannot afford. And we also have to have capital improvement in a lot of those areas. So that's on a social level as far as revitalization. Now, on the economic area, we need supermarkets in these areas. Now, mind you, when we bring businesses to the area, that's suggested at the same time they create jobs. So, put a super the markets in these areas, along with the recreation center, like I said, convenience stores, sit-in restaurants. We don't have any sit-in restaurants or lounges, or primarily in the depressed area. You may have one or two. I haven't seen them, but I'm pretty sure it's one or two out there. But it's not a common culture. We need movie theaters, clothing stores, ice cream parlors, music stores, coffee shops, possibly Dunkin' Donuts, because that's where I go. We need to hire a lot more. I had to put that plug in there. But we have to hire a lot more citizens for the development that's going on. I was at a meeting at the Department of Planning, and they was praising Baltimore for all of this development. And I got up and I spoke. I said, well, the development is nice, but this would be a golden opportunity for the citizens of Baltimore to be hired to do some of that development so we can knock two birds out with one stone. And no one couldn't answer, why aren't the citizens of Baltimore being hired to do the construction? Why aren't any minority construction companies getting any jobs? No one could actually answer those type of questions. So when you revitalize these areas, an executive manager that controls the board of estimates, when I sit down and she approve these contracts, and when I send the Baltimore Development Corporation, they're the ones that broker the deal. We're going to start brokering deals based on not only what the city can do for developers, what the developers can do for the city. And in a lot of these contracts, a deal is going to be predicated on, particularly a development deal, is how many citizens of Baltimore can be hired. It can no longer be a one-way love affair. And this is how our city is being managed now, based on profit and not people. And as executive manager, I can lead the way.
Ralph, because of time's sake, let me stop you right here. I want to ask you a serious question.
Yes,
and it's going to be on the mind. This is going to be on the minds of a lot of voters. And it's going to be kind of deep, but I'm about to ask you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Now, look. Now, you know, we've been around the block once or twice. Now, we, you know, and just in Baltimore recent history, we done had a couple of mayors who went down with scandal.
Yes.
They were, you brought down two sisters. And
yes.
I believe personally, this is my David Murphy take on this thing. I believe personally that because these two individuals had main system, the old boy system, whatever you want to call it, had overstepped their boundaries, and they decided to take on these sisters that have been in place for so long, and they start to mess with the old boy system money. And so, therefore, they devise all kinds of schemes or plans to get rid of these people. And, you know, and with this technology, I'm in media. I know about propaganda. I can do all kinds of things to people. And just said I heard through reliable. So I can conquer all kinds of things that, you know, that can scandalize a person. You said it yourself early in this conversation, that you had one police that was trying to take you down and one police exonerated you. You know, and so, you know, knowing this, already knowing this kind of thing, already knowing the history of our city with black mayors, and then how do you think that when you get in office and you're going to sit up there and you're going to shake the wagon, so to speak, you're going to sit up there and speak truth to power, you're going to shake things up. How do you think, with you, just you, your ideas and with their honorable and everything, how do you suppose that you could stand up to such a giant such as that?
Well, one thing, working at the Baltimore City Jail, which arguably is the worst pressurized jail in all America, and I stood 18 and a half years without any corruption, so that kind of prepared me. But the one key thing when you're talking about government, in order to break down a machine or a system, you can't be a part of it. You can't be in the pockets of status quo entities and then expect to have the freedom to do whatever you want to do. Now, our city's charter gives me absolute power, and the only way I can relinquish that power is if that I undermine my own morals and my own values and sell out the people that I'm willing to serve. I'm not going to be a part of the status quo. I'll do business with the status quo in reference to the citizens of Baltimore. I do not want anybody's money. I'll have a annual salary as mayor of $190,000. I have my pension, and I have a publishing company. So, therefore, I'm totally unbought and unimpressed by money. And that's the key thing. And Baltimore's in need of leadership. And throughout the history of the world, it was always great leaders who were true to their mission that prevailed over corruption that surrounded them. And that's how I intend to prevail.
Okay, fantastic. You know, because like I say, things like this, you know, I believe a lot of people come in, like I say, but I don't know. Like I say, I ain't never been heavy into politics, but I do know that a person can make changes if they dedicated and they sincere and they're honorable, you know, because
I would just like to quickly mention my hero and my mentor in politics, Adam Clayton Powell. So everybody Adam Clayton Powell, and this who Ralph is following after. We're going to get equality for all the citizens of Baltimore.
All right, yeah, I remember him very well.
Yes, sir.
And, all right. Yes, you got some old schools on in there.
Okay. Yep.
But
yeah,
we have a call on the line.
Okay, let's take the call.
Let's call if you don't mind. All right.
Okay.
443-691-2029. You're on the air. You have a question or comment? You have a question or comment? Okay, I guess they shy. We'll mute them back out.
Yeah, maybe they just want to listen in, you know. But in any case, okay, Trevor Ralph. Yeah,
yes,
like
sir.
I say, yeah, Adam Clayton Powell, my history, he was a great black man, you know, and he did a lot of things. We had like Mayor Barr, you know, even though he got caught up in some things, but you know, but he made changes, you know. And so I'm just going to say this to you. I'm going to say this to you before we get, you know, we ain't got that much time left on these airways. But, like I said, I had great faith in you as a person, but I don't have too much faith in the system. I'm just saying that personally. But let me say this to you. How can people, because, you know, after hearing you talk this evening, how can people support you and assist you?
They can go to my website, RalphForMayor2020.com, or they can just go on my Facebook page. I always have my website listed, and they can put on my website, send in donations, or they can volunteer, because we only accept money from the citizens of Baltimore who I intend to serve. And other people also outside of Baltimore who believe in the message of equally investing in all of Baltimore in equity for humanity. So it's RalphForMayor2020.com. And I appreciate everybody who have helped us thus far, because we've come a long way, Dave, and we made our announcement a year ago, and I was virtually unknown, but now the whole city pretty much know me. It's just a matter of keep pushing.
That's right, because you're definitely putting in the work now, because like I said, I attest to that, because right now, all the ones who are running for office, I see you more vigilant, I see you more in the neighborhoods, I see you out there on a consistent basis, you know, and not just where the cameras are available, you out there, you know, you putting in the work now, and I know a worker when I see one. And but Brother Ralph Johnson, and I'm just saying this to you, we only got about 5 minutes left on this broadcast. I want to thank you so much for taking your time, because I know you're an extremely busy man, and I know you're going to do what you say you're going to do, because you like I said, you have a history, not only through your authorship, but, you know, just as a person, as a man, that you're a man of your word. And I just want the our general public readers, you know, listeners, to understand that I don't endorse politicians or anything like that, but I can't endorse a person. And when I say a person, I'm talking about the man himself, Ralph Johnson. I would go toe-to-toe. I would stand next to this brother because he's a true soldier, a true soldier. And I thank you for taking time out for being with us this evening. And, again, Brother Satavi, I appreciate you, sir, because, you know, you're always putting in the work. Like I said, you and I go a long way back. And I'm just, you know, I'm so appreciative being around soldiers all the time, you know, and it just feels good because, you know, sometimes when you're in a battle, sometimes you get weary sometimes. It's just good to know you have comrades, you know, to stand by you sometimes, you know, and it's not an easy task. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you hear my voice and you heard what Brother Ralph Johnson is saying, Brother Satavi has been saying, you know, support this brother because, you know, everybody, if we all just pitch in a little bit sometimes, you know, we can make changes. We can make changes. Brother Ralph is a prime example of what's here. Brother Satavi, so is David Murphy. To be as,
yeah.
And, you know, we all out there, we putting in work and we're going to make changes, you know, but we need, it takes all of us, you know, we all in this together. I am you and you are me. And we have to support one another. And so, Brother Ralph, you know, we have a few minutes left. I want to, if it's all right with Brother Satavi, man, you know, we have a few minutes left, man. Say what you want to say and let people know how they can get in contact with you again. And so that, you know, because so that you can continue with your message and with your campaign, because we definitely need some changes.
Thank you very much for having me, Brother Murphy. I really, really appreciate it. And I would just like to say to the citizens of Baltimore, I'm really, really passionate about changing the paradigm of the inequity that's going on in Baltimore. And if you want your children to have the opportunity to grow up in a society where they have equal opportunity for upward mobility to be the most successful individuals in Baltimore or in the world, then I'm going to create an economic, social landscape that will give them the opportunity to excel in life. And God bless you all, Baltimore.
All right, Brother Satavi, this is David Murphy, and again, we thank our listening audience for tuning in. And again, the National Black Unity News is a publication, nationwide circulated publication, and we have, it's a solution-oriented publication, so we encourage you to get your subscription, and you can do that by going to www.thenationalblackunitynews.com, or you can call 443-455-2373. Back to you, Brother Satavi.
All right. We want to thank you, Brother Ralph, for being on the airways with us tonight. And I want to thank those people that's listening to this show, either live or in the archives. And we're going to close out with our theme song called It's My Time, which is a very, very appropriate song, especially for the night show, because one of the things we said in our reading from Daily Motivations for African American Success, quote, if we could just support each other, that's 90% of the problem, unquote. And that quote is from Edward Gardner, founder of Soft Sheen Products. And I'm pretty sure, you know, Mr. Gardner seen a lot, knew a lot, been through a lot, just trying to do what needed to be done. So with all of that said, we're going to close out with our theme song called It's My Time.
Calling me to
7,000-plus listeners for tuning in for a show here on Home-Based Business 101. Until our next show time, we want to thank you for listening. Take care and God bless.